Hello, this is Barack Obama, and it's the 14th of January. I'm sitting in an airport in Tel Aviv, finishing up on a 9-day trip to the Middle East. Yeah, those of you who listened to the last podcast know that I spent several days in Baghdad, as well as Qatar, Kuwait, and Jordan. For the last 5 days, I've traveled throughout Israel and the Palestinian territories. My impressions, you know, for those of you who've been to the Middle East, I think you recognize that it's an extraordinarily complex place. We had the opportunity on our first day to meet with a variety of members of Israeli security forces and get briefings from them about their border situation and their concerns surrounding Iran, as well as the prospects of elections, both on the Palestinian side and the Israeli side. This was a difficult time for the Israeli people. Prime Minister Sharon had just suffered a massive stroke, and there's a lot of tumult in terms of political positioning. Fortunately, at least on the Israeli side, there seems to be a growing consensus represented by the Kadima Party that a centrist position that seeks to disengage from certain areas that are currently controlled by Israel while maintaining vigilance against terrorist attacks is the right approach. I also had an opportunity then to fly from Tel Aviv all the way up north on a Black Hawk helicopter and see the borders of Israel and the separation barrier that's been erected. The separation barrier is a major bone of contention between Palestinians and Israelis at this point. In most portions, it's a high fence that appears temporary and could be moved if the peace process and negotiations move forward. In some areas, it is a wall, a high barrier that can't be breached and certainly looks permanent. One of the points that I think all Israelis want to emphasize is how small and potentially vulnerable from the ground Israel is. And it's true that at certain points, it's only about 20 to 30 minutes wide. When you are flying over, it is almost impossible to distinguish between, at least for a layman, between Palestinian villages and Israeli villages. And we had the opportunity to fly up over the Sea of Galilee towards the Israeli, Lebanese, and Syrian borders and visited with a gentleman whose house had been hit by a Katyusha missile just recently, launched by Hezbollah. The militant Islamic organization that is active in Syria and Lebanon occasionally engage in skirmishes across the border and obviously makes the population there feel extraordinarily vulnerable. But having said that, one of the things that you do get a strong sense of is that Israel at this point possesses such superior military forces that they don't really have enormous vulnerability in a conventional sense. You know, there's no risk of invasion by its neighbors, and Israel's economy and infrastructure seem extraordinarily robust and vibrant. The following day, I went into Ramallah and the West Bank and had an opportunity to talk to Palestinian students as well as Palestinian businessmen, and also had a meeting with Abu Mazen, the president and successor to Yasser Arafat. As you travel to the West Bank, you get a sense of the differences between life for Palestinians and Israelis in this region. Palestinians have to suffer through the checkpoint system, the barriers, both fence and wall, that exist just to get to their jobs, oftentimes to travel from north and south, even within the West Bank. It's created enormous hardship for them. There's high unemployment, and the economy is not doing as well as it should. Unfortunately, the Palestinians, through Yasser Arafat, suffered from leadership that seemed to be more interested in the rhetoric of Israel's destruction and less interested in actually constructively creating a peaceful solution to the problem and focusing on delivery of services to the Palestinian people. And so I had a wonderful discussion with Palestinian students as well as discussions with Palestinian businessmen and Abu Mazen about the importance of the Palestinian people focusing on building up infrastructure, building up capacity, building up an honest, non-corrupt government, consolidating arms that are currently dispersed among a variety of militias under a single command structure of the Palestinian Authority, and entering into constructive negotiations on a nonviolent basis to arrive at a peaceful solution to the Israeli-Palestinian problem. Whether that's going to be able to happen or not is not yet clear. There are elections on January 25th, and Abu Mazen, his party, Fatah party, is being challenged very effectively by Hamas, which is historically been a terrorist organization. This is their first venture into politics, and they've proved to be much more adept at politics and organization than the ruling Fatah movement, which has been marked for its reputation of corruption. The next day, and the final full day in Israel, was spent finally doing a little bit of sightseeing and traveling through the old city of Jerusalem. Those of you who've been here know the incredible magic of the city as the sun rises over 2,000-year-old walls built by David, Solomon, the Turkish Empire. We visited the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, where the site of Calvary and Jesus' tomb is located just a stone's throw away. The Western Wall, across the way from there, you have the magnificent Dome of the Rock, gilded in gold. It gives you a sense of just how much history is here. It reminds us that you have to be humble when you think about the Middle East and what's possible here. There are a lot of memories, there's a lot of history, there are a lot of grudges and bitterness. And in some ways, it reminds us of how lucky we are as Americans that, ironically, we don't have this kind of history. It's easier for us to forget and move on. It's much harder for people here who are seeing every day the roots of their own people and the conflicts that go back generation after generation. On the other hand, as I was leaving Jerusalem on that final day and looking over the old city, I was reminded of how similar in many ways Palestinians and Jews, Muslims, Christians, how similar all these people were. And that despite the differences in language and religion, and despite the bitter history of the region, it must be possible at some level to have each group recognize the humanity in the other.